And welcome back. Friday night into Saturday morning, it means open lines here on Coast to Coast. Lots going on. I hope everything is well with you and your family and your friends and the people you care about with this pandemic that's out there as we slowly start opening up a lot of places on Monday. Restaurants will be at about 25% capacity here in the St. Louis area. And hopefully they'll get a little bigger and bigger and bigger. But I think this pandemic will slow down as the weather gets warmer. But I hope everything is okay with you folks. It's been a mess economically, as you well know. I mean, people are unemployed. People are just not working the way they should be. Airlines are all screwed up. I had my flight. I'm going to Denver tomorrow to tape our Beyond Belief TV shows. And my flight from St. Louis to Denver, which was a direct flight, was canceled. And they put me on a different flight, a little more consolidated, because they're not having a lot of people fly. This one goes to Dallas, and from Dallas I have to go to Denver. And it's just a hassle. Folks, I'm heading out to the airport in 5 hours to get ready for this flight. It's crazy, crazy times. But I hope everything is okay with all of you. Let's get open lines going when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. A couple nights ago, we had a doctor on who was talking about the science of this pandemic. And he said one thing which I found kind of interesting. He said, we don't need prayer, we need science. And you know what? I got to thinking about that. I think we need prayer too. Because I think prayer works. We did our prayer experiment, and you know what? I just think it works. But let's go to the calls. Let's begin our open lines. Who's up? Tammy in Palmer, Alaska. Welcome to the program. Hi, Tammy.
Hi, George. How you doing? Hi.
I'm doing good. How about yourself?
Wonderful. I'm outside on my deck. It's beautiful dusk. It's wonderful.
Are you wearing a mask or not?
Oh, no.
Nah.
I'm in the middle of nowhere.
You're safe.
Oh, yeah. I'm good.
You're safe. What's going on?
Well, when your last guest was on, the first hour, of course, I'm in Alaska, and he was talking about Portlock. I've got a couple of stories to tell you, but
okay.
I want to talk to you about Portlock real quick.
Sure.
Those creatures in Portlock, they're called hairy men. And they're actually larger than a regular Bigfoot. They also call them mountain giants. And I contacted somebody that does a lot of research, and I'll give you some contact information for them. But they're going to actually go there this summer.
Do you think they're the real deal out there?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez. Bigger
they
than Bigfoot.
The real deal. And the only way you can get to Portlock is by air or by boat. It takes 4 hours to get there by boat.
You might want to get out of there fast, though.
I'm not going. They're going. they know what they're doing.
All right. I'm
going
to put you on hold when you're done with your call, and you can give some info to Gina, okay?
Okay, I will. Also, I wanted to tell you, there's a lot of really crazy things that goes on up here. My husband and I take a little trip, which is very close to where I live. As a matter of fact, I can see the mountain from my back deck where I'm sitting right now. It's called Hatcher Pass. And a lot of people go up there in September and late August to do berry picking because we've got wonderful blueberries up there. And we went up there, and while I was going up the mountain, you can see all the people down picking blueberries, I saw something running across mountaintops. There's two mountaintops and then came down. And it took him, I'm saying him, I don't know if it was a man or it was a Bigfoot. But it took this creature about 3 minutes and 15 seconds to go across two mountains and down the mountain. And he stopped a couple of times to look down on the berry pickers.
Jeez.
And I have it on video, and I will also send that to you.
Love to see it. And then I just give her the right that we can post it on the website, okay?
Oh, yeah, that's no problem. Another thing we have going on here, you know, we are in the Alaska Triangle, which does go to, you remember one of your people were talking about a pyramid. We do have a Black Pyramid here.
Yep.
And there was a woman who had her daughter outside here in Palmer playing, and this was, I think this was in the 90s. And we also have the little people here. And she saw something very small run across her yard was manicured, but then on the edge of it, just like mine is, mine's similar. Mm-hmm. Just on the edge, it's all kind of wild. And she saw something darting back and forth really fast. And the thing took her daughter, and she's never been found.
Oh, my God. And how little were these little people?
They're about 3 feet tall.
They snatched her.
Yeah, and I used to go and pick up people for our wildfires and take them to different locations. And we had a lot of different Native folks come in from the villages. And I was asking them, I said, okay, I've heard some really strange things that's going on up there. They talked to me about the little people, but they also talked to me about these blue orbs. And they would hear children or women screaming for help. And they would go out to these places, and they'd take their snow machines out, and they would either crash through the ice or they would never be found again. They would die terrible, horrific deaths. So there's a whole lot here in Alaska regarding a lot of different cryptids and just very strange things.
Tammy, did you see the movie The Fourth Kind?
No, I don't think
it was. It was about Nome, Alaska.
Oh yes, he did.
And people disappearing. I mean, is that, what do you think? Is that a real story or was that Hollywood?
There was a lot of Hollywood involved because Nome, Alaska doesn't have trees. But as far as disappearances in Alaska, we have over 2,000 people a year that disappear, and I know that you've had
David Politis. Yeah,
you've had him on. And we had one that was real interesting, and he's even talked about it. This was in Seward, Alaska, on the 4th of July. They do a giant mountain marathon, mm-hmm. where you go up. There's a lot of people that's running that. He disappeared, and they've never found him.
That's strange how these people just disappear. But I'm going to put you on hold, Tammy, and give some info to Gina, if you would. And let's go to Vancouver, Canada. Amir's with us on the international line. Welcome to the program, Amir.
Hello, George. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. How are you? I hope everything's well.
Yes, everything is good here. We are almost getting ready to reopen, hopefully.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting time, so we are enjoying it, actually. Since Vancouver is already socially isolated with the rest of the world.
That's true.
I'm new here. I came here in 2017, and I've been traveling for the past 12 years, and I had a couple of stories that hopefully will be interesting for our audience.
Sure. And where did you come from?
Originally born in Iran. I'm Persian background.
Okay.
Grew up in Southeast Asia and Pacific, spent 5 years in Papua New Guinea. If you look up Manus Island, I spend about 5 years on Manus Island.
Oh, gosh, you've been all over the place.
I have, with lots of experiences and stories.
All right, well, hit us with one or two good ones here.
Okay, so first fascinating thing for me that I found out when I came here to North America is the whole idea of Sasquatch. And the fascinating part is that it's interesting that we have basically our own version. They have it in Australia, they have it in Middle East. There's two, I don't know which one would be more interesting, but I would preferably tell you the second one, which is from my grandfather. They have, basically the whole idea starts from this creature that's called the desert ghoul, or the desert monster.
Okay.
And when I came here, I learned that in English also they do call it a ghoul as well, the G-H-O-U-L. So my grandfather, his dad was a very wealthy person. He had public bathhouses back in 1970s and 1960s.
Okay, back in Iran?
Back in Iran, yeah, when people were not, they did not have bathrooms in their houses. Like, they didn't have shower rooms.
Really? I didn't know that. So everybody, like, shared a place or something?
There was, like, public bathhouses like they have in Japan that was more traditional. And it was funded by the Shah's father government. But my grandfather's father, my great-grandfather, he was one of the very wealthy people who owned a handful of those bathhouses.
Aha, okay.
So he would tell me stories of hearing weird noises, of parties overnight in these bathhouses, but there were no human beings in there when they closed the bathhouses. So they had no idea where these sounds are coming from. He said because there was always gold involved, wherever there was gold involved, there were weird creatures involved as well. And he said because there was an enormous amount of gold, there was so much gold coins that at the end of the night, when they wanted to count those money, they had so much money that they couldn't count one by one. So they had this ball, this metal ball that they knew there was like 1,000 gold coin or 1,000 silver coin in one of those. So they would go one ball, two ball, three ball. They would count those coins like that. And so what happened is they sold their business by the advice of his cousins, and they bought the first two buses in the entire country. At the time when there was no
entrepreneurs,
roads.
When nobody was doing anything.
Yeah, there were no actual roads. People used to travel by horses and donkeys between cities. So my grandfather, he became a bus driver in probably 12, 13 years old. He became a bus driver with his father moving people between cities.
That's amazing. How could he see over the steering wheel at that age?
Well, that was a question that I always asked, and he said, well, pillows are always your friend.
Ha.
And there's this term, they not a chauffeur, but the assistant in the bus. He had a younger guy helping him as an assistant because it was scary traveling between these cities. And
oh, sure.
They used to do their travel between Kashan, which is the most ancient city in Iran and in the region, where they found the oldest artificial eye belonging to a couple of thousand or maybe 7,000, several thousand years ago recently. They used to move passengers between the capital city, Tehran, and Kashan. One night, his bus breaks down, and he had already dropped all the passengers after 7 or 2 days of trips between these two cities, which now there's a highway that he can do it in 4 hours. But back then, because there were no roads and it was difficult to make the journey, the bus breaks down. So he has to leave the assistant in the bus. His name is Ismail.
Okay.
And he says, Ismail, you stay in the bus. I'll have to go back to the capital city and bring spare part and fix the bus. Heavy duty mechanic background, so basically he has to fix it himself. No mechanics at that time. They have no idea what this thing is.
Right.
Set aside fixing it. But he was very technical. He came back. On his way back towards the bus, well, he came back to the city, picked the spare parts, going back. He encounters a person in the middle of the desert with a donkey. But his realizations comes later on as he's telling me the story. He's like, I did not realize these things until hours later or days later. The size of this creature and the donkey, it's just changing constantly. The donkey gets bigger, the guy gets bigger. Or the donkey gets smaller, the guy gets smaller than the donkey. It's just changing constantly.
I mean, this is happening or it's changing with his stories?
It is happening, actually.
Okay.
So he's like maybe, I would say, a couple hundred feet away, he starts calling my grandpa by his first name. Kareem, Kareem, come here. Where are you going? You're lost. You come here, I'll give you a ride. And he's like, at first he does not, well, you know, he's confused in the middle of desert. It's so scary. There's no one. So he doesn't question how does he know my name. But he's like, hey, yeah, I'm going towards my bus. He's like, oh, yeah, I know. Ismail is by the bus. You left
the bus
there.
Oh, my gosh.
He's been looking for you. And anyways, my dad has a, my grandfather had a big backpack kind of thing that he had his pillow and pillowcase and, you know, blankets and
sure.
So on.
And he's walking, right? He walked there and he's walking back. Okay.
Yeah, he's walking back. So he's walking from the capital. But he did get a couple of rides with other people on their horses and donkeys, but there's a junction that they said, well, we don't go this way. This is the scary part at this time of the night. We don't make it.
Uh-huh.
And my grandfather was one of the bravest people that I've ever seen. I used to be, when I was younger, I was scared of dark so much, and he told me so many stories, and he made me prepared that I've totally lost this sense of being scared, because he said, what's the last thing that can happen to you? It's death for you. There's no fear about it.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid of a dead person. Be afraid of a person who's alive.
Who's alive, that's right. They could hurt you.
Yeah, right? So when he's having this big knapsack on his back with all his, you know, spare parts and everything, so this guy approaches him and says, yeah, give it to me. You've been walking for a very long way. Give it to me. And he takes it. He just kind of snatched it from him and put it on. Without him giving the green light of, yeah, sure, go ahead, take it, he just snatched it from him, like being too close and intimate. He takes this thing and put it on the neck, over the neck of the donkey. And he said earlier, when I was about to approach this guy, before I see this guy, I could hear somebody talking, two people talking to each other. And I thought maybe I am hallucinated, or I haven't had enough sleep. Maybe it's because of that. But anyways, they continue going towards his bus, and then he's like, I have a feeling that you are going the wrong way. I am sure my bus was, you know, after this fork, this junction, we had to turn left and follow the donkey pathway or the pathway that people were making. And he was like, no, I know the way. There's a shortcut in here. And there's no shortcuts in the desert.
Right. It's one way.
Exactly. So he's like, okay, no problem. And then they continue going and going. And all of a sudden, right now I'm actually getting a goosebump telling you this part. Every single time that I remember this story, I remember exactly every single details of it. My grandpa said, I realized, this guy does not have feet.
He doesn't have feet?
He's got hoofs.
Hoofs. Oh, my God. It's the devil.
He's got hoofs, and he's looking enormously weird and scary, and I am God.
I'm coming up to a break, Amir. Does your grandfather, obviously, he got out of it. But how did he get away?
Well, he had to fight with this guy, and not mentioning anything about that he's got a hoof, and he realized, because it would have been the end of his life. And the guy probably realizing that he's not aware of it. But anyways, he got into a fight with him. He snatched his knapsack off the donkey, and then he ran. And then when he ran, he said the donkey and the guy, they were both swearing at him from a long distance for a long time. And
he got away. The guy was either the devil or something like that. More open lines. What a story when we come back. George Norrie back with you, and welcome back to Open Lines, where you become the program. Let's go to JT in Indianapolis on the wildcard line. JT, welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Okay, how about yourself?
I'm hooking up a trailer right now. I can't honk my horn yet, but I'm not here.
What are you hauling? What are you hauling tonight?
Pharmaceutical grade starch, cornstarch.
Cornstarch, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, they coat your pills with it, like the Tylenol and stuff like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, anyway, so I was going to ask David, about the winged creature that attacked a security guard and his dog in Chile, if that was any thing about maybe a Mothman or possibly to do with the Thunderbirds, but he's gone now.
I think it was probably the Thunderbird story.
Right.
Those big, huge, Cessna-sized birds.
And I'm in Indianapolis, and I've been waiting to see you for years, so I got the first ticket as soon as they go on sale, and you better not come here and try not to sing, young man.
Oh, yeah.
You better be cranking them pipes up.
You'll like the singing, trust me.
Well, I'm a musician, so.
And
the only other thing I really got tonight is Jimmy Church on this weekend covering, I saw, or something?
Now I've got George Knapp on Saturday and Sunday. Jimmy will be on in another week or so.
Oh, okay. All right, yeah. I didn't know who, you know. Tomorrow's show is going to be great.
Yeah, everything's good. I love this program.
I've been listening since Art Bell, so.
Well, you've been a long time. Gina, all right, you keep driving safely, JT.
Gina is the best call screener, and here's to you and Gina. There you go, George.
You got it. Thanks, JT. Appreciate it. Now, we don't want to tell Tom this, though, do we? Cornelius is with us in Louisiana. Hello there, Mr. White.
Hey, George. I tell you, we love you. And, bye, I love our truckers and stuff. And you know the prisoners and prison guards all over the country love Coast to Coast AM.
Yeah, they do. They do. As a matter of fact, I got a call in my office one day from a prisoner. You know, they have to go through that special phone system. But he was able to get to his phone, and he made his call, and I accepted it. And we chatted a little bit about himself and what got him in there and what's going to get him out.
Yeah. You know, George, that would be a great program, maybe one night have just the prison guards and stuff. The inmates won't be able to call from 12 to 4, but the guards and stuff like that or somebody – because that COVID-19 really going through the prison system. I saw in California where you got some prisoners trying to get the stuff so they can get out, but they won't be able to get out.
Yeah, it's a mess. It really is.
But I wanted to talk, and I know Gina told you, and I would love for Gina, I don't know if you can have Tommy or Gina or some of the call screeners actually be the guest host too, just like you were doing the guest host the other night. I was trying to get on with Jimmy Church. I said I was going to church because I can't go to church now. And you played Richard Dobby's song, so I never did make it on. I've been trying to call my brother Barry, but Barry, I can't get a hold of him on Rock Hill, South Carolina. I can't get him.
He got on last night for a little bit.
Yeah, I know. I heard him, but whatever's wrong with his cell phone, it goes straight to voicemail every time I call him.
Tell him pay his bill.
I wanted to tell you, George, about the callers and stuff, like Joe from Long Island and Joe from the Bronx and Thomas from La Jolla, Annie from Alabama, and, of course, Barry and Mike the Millennial in Denver and Wayne from Chicago and Wayne from Tacoma, Washington. We've got some of the greatest listeners and callers on the air, and of course, the greatest host with you after Art Bell passed. And I just, George, sometimes I cry at night because of what I've been through. You know what I've been through.
I know. And you've been through a lot.
It's just that the people you have on, the guest hosts and the callers and stuff, they keep me going and they keep you going too. I know when Art Bell was going through the hell when he lost his first wife, he just felt real bad, but the callers and listeners prayed for him and stuff and kept him going. And we all miss him, but you've done a great job with the program and stuff. And you at least listen to people, George. Some of these people, they don't listen and they don't care. So I hope Annie from Alabama gets in, because I like to hear old Annie with her different anecdotes and stuff for us. But God bless you, George. We love you out here. We love Coast to Coast. And I just couldn't know what to do with it.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm gonna put you on the air with Annie right now. They tell me she's calling. Hello, Annie. Cornelius wants to say hi.
Hi, Cornelius. I've been trying to get in touch with you.
Oh, yeah, Annie from Alabama. God bless you, baby.
I'm not going to let this guest host be mean to Cornelius now. I'm going to
be mean to you.
Nobody's ever mean to Cornelius. One at a time, folks. You go first, okay. Corny.
Well, she was talking about Ian Punnett. Ian Punnett cut Annie off one day, and I didn't like that.
Well, you know, a lot of times we got to pace the show and move it along and stuff like that. What were you talking about, Annie? Rats or what?
It was actually about what he mistreated Cornelius was what I was driving at.
Well, he's got a wry sense of humor. He's not mean.
I know. He's a good person.
But anyways,
he was telling a story about when he was an officer. He was a MP, and he had some schooling about some bioweapons. And before you know it, somehow or another, Cornelius' call got dropped.
Well, sometimes technically that does happen. We've lost guests just like that sometimes, too. But, Corny, I'll let you say goodbye to Annie before we finish up her call. Go ahead.
Can I tell you what I'm calling for?
Bye, Annie from Alabama. We love you, and God bless you, Annie, and be careful.
Well, I want to tell you what I called for, and I don't even know, Cornelius.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm calling because I read an article in the National Institutes of Health website, because I was looking up some information about alcohol to make hand sanitizer, and I ran upon an article about some doctors who got poisoned by wood alcohol, because the alcohol is so hard to get that honest people can't even get hand sanitizer that's made out of decent ethanol or decent isopropanol. These antiquated laws for alcohol to prevent people from running off just a few milliliters. It's illegal to have a still and run off a teaspoonful. And you can't even buy it, because I tried to buy it from Aper in different places, and they subjected me to several $1,000 worth of paperwork and lawyers.
Annie, go to the criticalhealthnews.com website. There's a alcohol-free hand sanitizer. Take a look at that. See if that's something you would like.
I don't want that. I want the alcohol.
Alcohol dries up really fast. They've got a new science here. Just go take a look at it. I mean, do your own research on it.
I'm not interested in anything if it's not ethanol.
Well, there could be ethanol in it, but there's no alcohol in it.
That's alcohol. That's what's in bourbon. Ethanol is burnt in fuel.
I know that. You got 10% in fuel.
Yes. And I have a solution that works for me to get free internet in these places where these students cannot get internet.
How do they get free internet? How do they do that?
There's a lot of ways. It's two different types of portable Wi-Fi hotspots. One of them is on the Obama phone, and they want to forbid people from using it. But the law says that you have to be allowed to use it. Well, you have to use it in many cases, because it's free in many cases. And the reason you have to use it is because it just won't work on a smartphone to do the schoolwork.
What do you think of this idea of bringing buses by with Wi-Fi on it?
That's ridiculous. Why don't they just give all these kids an Obama phone with a Wi-Fi hotspot on it and give them the free gigabytes? I got 40 free gigabytes last month.
How much would it cost? How much would it cost to give everybody a phone?
Those phones are sold for $19.99.
But I guess if they come up with stimulus packages, they can afford that too, Annie. Thanks. Let's go next to Mark in Alaska. Welcome to the program. Hey, Mark.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. And you're by that big lake, right?
I'm right on that big lake. I am right on Iliamna, about 50 feet away is where I live.
Have you heard that legend, that story we've been talking about?
I've heard it for years, and had all the people come out here, National Geographic, BBC, all kinds of people. And we had them, they were hot and heavy for about 4 years filming and doing all the shows. I personally have never seen it. I do believe it's a sturgeon. there was a photograph taken from a plane sometime back in the 70s or 80s of the so-called monster, and the silhouette sure looked like a huge...
Yeah, it's got to be, what, 15 feet long?
Yeah, at least. You know, there, a few years ago, some credible people I know over in Kakanak, that's across the lake, there was about six of them out there, and they saw something they couldn't explain. But, you know, being right on the lake, one thing in the summertime, when the heat comes up, being so big, you'll be looking out in the middle of the lake and all of a sudden see an island that just isn't there. You know, it's mirage. And it's, so there's all sorts of stuff you see from my window that you put the binos up and you swear it's a ship going down or something.
Yep.
But it just disappears, so.
How long you been out that way, Mark?
Oh, the first time I got out here was in the 70s, and I guided out of here for about 15 years. I've lived here full-time, just about 20.
That's a long time. Well, where were you born?
I was born in Illinois, and I grew up in northern Illinois and Wisconsin.
Okay. Yeah, I know those areas. Detroit for me.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, the one thing is I was a professional hunting guide for big game for years, and of all the times I sat on the hill, I felt a little slighted because I never really saw anything unusual.
God, and you would think you would of anybody, right?
Yeah, that's what I think. You know, I saw a lot of wolverines and animals playing, which I, you know, had a lot of great Marty Stolfer type situations that were just great, and a lot of big animals. But then again, you know, I know how those big-ass moose and, those big moose and those bears can hide in what seems like nothing. So, the people down in New Halen, especially the folks around our age, swear when they were growing up they used to see the hairy man all the time.
I know. These are incredible creatures, to be sure. Monsters everywhere. Mayat's in New York City. Welcome to the program. Hi, Mayat.
Yes. Good morning, George, and to the beloved coast-to-coast listenership and family.
Thank you very much.
I have a couple suggestions for potential shows. One would be someone who's doing some good work on reverse speech and put these scientists and politicians to the test. And the other one would be on, and I'm blanking on his first name right now, but the last name is it Ingersoll? Is Lockwood, okay, the one who wrote the book in the 1800s, I think it was the late 1800s, called The Last President. Right. That came up with a guest host that you had one day, and I can't remember the details, but are you familiar with who I'm talking about?
Vaguely.
Yeah. He wrote this crazy book called The Last President, and his name was Trump, and the adventures of Baron Trump, and going to the center
of the earth,
and the Tao and everything is really, really bizarre.
Well, what is it? What is it that fascinates you about that?
Well, the fact that, 100+ years ago, what was it, around 1870, 1890s, he wrote a book called The Last President, and seeming in certain aspects to describe this time. So that's kind of spooky. So a scholar or someone who studies him would be very, very interesting. But the last point I want to make is I kind of enjoyed Dr. Michael Stein because he comes with the perspective of the public health professional. But I do agree with you that there needs to be not only science, but prayer also.
Yep.
But right now, it seems, George, that we have, there's an expression called the wing and a prayer. It seems that we're there because when the states are competing for essential supplies and then they're getting gouged prices, when there's no central coordination of the tests, which when you look at the countries who have been successful, South Korea didn't have to shut down. Howard went into this. They were able to test, to trace, to isolate, and they have a whole history because they're nearby China. China has not had all of the outbreaks. MERS means Middle East Respiratory Syndrome. The swine flu originated in America, but a point of clarification about a story that's going around is that the, what was it, the $3.7 million did not go to China. It went to a company based in New York called Echo Alliance. And what they were doing is they were putting inspectors and watchdogs, as it were, in not just China, but all over in different parts of the world, which is important because you heard about a building at the Wuhan lab that had some shoddy things going on.
Well, there were lots of things going on there, but we still think a lot of that money got to that Wuhan lab, Mayat. Lots of it, maybe even through this company you just mentioned. Back with more open lines in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.